Oh, well, thanks everybody for joining. I want to say thanks everybody for tuning in. I like thinking Wi-Fi and picturing people turning knobs to kind of like, you know, tune in literally. So we're here with Comma Echo to talk about Small Craft Warning. So I could go through everybody, but I don't want to mess anything up. So let's maybe just introduce yourselves one by one, if that's okay, and tell me like where you're coming from, where you're broadcasting from. So do you want to go, James?
Yeah, I guess I'll start. I am a photographer, filmmaker, musician, songwriter, whatever, artist really living in the Caribbean. Have been, you know, I was born in Trinidad. I grew up there. I went to school in England when I was like 12 in 1989. I met Lewis there, Lewis Sanchez. Became very friendly with him. And, you know, as far as I was concerned, he was like my introduction to like the formality of music. You know, I was always deeply into music, but this was the first time I'd ever seen anyone actually, you know, these are white keys and these are black keys and there's a science behind everything. And that opened a lot of doors for me. And then I ended up leaving England, going back to Trinidad, you know, to work professionally, you know, working for governments or big sort of national milestones. I was always there with a camera, getting these things. But between all of those experiences, I would be on the coast. You know, I would be and just surfing a lot, spending a lot of time in the ocean, and managed to bring all of that together in this. This is like a way for me to package a lot of experiences from my life, because this is coming from like more than 10 years of music and film and photography that all seemed to be heading in some direction, and I didn't really know what direction that was until more recently, and realized it was all about the ocean. It's all about the coast and just that zone where so much energy detonates onto the land, you know. It's a really cool place to be and to write and to just draw inspiration from. So that's what Small Craft Warning, you know, is a product of that.
I'll probably make you say all of that again.
Sure. Well, I'll just splice it around.
Okay. Well, I'm Lewis. I was born in Portugal, Portuguese parents. But when I was born, sort of my parents separated. One went to Switzerland and the other one stayed in Portugal. And when I was 11, I came to England because my mother remarried. By then, I discovered music because my grandmother was a pianist. So there was always a piano in her house, and I was just basically, I took a few lessons, but I mostly played, I taught myself, I played by ear. So hitting the keys enough times, you eventually figure it out.
A process of elimination.
Exactly, and eventually, you know, music it can be quite formulaic, so you can sort of figure out where things are, and then your fingers just sort of fall in the right place, you know, and you think of something, your fingers just do it, and it's great. So when I came to England when I was 11, you know, I started secondary education. I couldn't speak English. And, you know, fast forward a few years, I met James. And he had these crazy multicolored trousers. And he had a funny accent. So he was different. And I like different. So, yeah, we became friends. Soon after, we started making music together, you know, and created a band, and then another band, and another band, you know. And so on, you know, the music sort of just went on. But so, you know, that was just the teenage years, music, bands and everything. You know, then I went into sort of more formal music. I went into production, into audio engineering, setting up a recording studio with a friend, you know, doing all that stuff. But then I sort of fell into the trap of doing a regular job. I became a web developer, and because I thought that it would pay for all my gear, because, you know, musicians don't make much money. So I thought, well, if I get this job and I earn some money, I can buy the gear and then I can be a musician.
And you're coming to us from England now, right?
Yeah, from England, yeah, from Brighton.
Chaz, you're in England too?
Yeah, so I also grew up in Trinidad, and I also moved to England when I was 11. And I've been in love with guitar as an instrument. You know, I'm definitely a guitarist first and a musician second. And it's only been recently, in maybe the last 2 years, that I've started taking music itself seriously as opposed to just playing lots of guitar. So that's been, for the last couple of years, my journey. I'm in kind of a similar situation to Lewis, where I you know, definitely do a very full-time job in order to support doing music.
Okay, great. Sharda?
I'm in Trinidad right now. I'm a sitarist. It's an instrument that I started, well, I suppose, quite naturally, because my dad is. I first started with piano and then moved to sitar from about formally at the age of 9. My background is classical, North Indian classical music, but I do a lot of fusion experimental work, a lot of stuff with artists, poets, writers, that sort of thing. My main job is writing and research. I've now shifted more to fiction writing and pretty much full time.
Fantastic. And as I say, last but not least, don't feel left out there, Kiwan.
Yeah, so my name is Kiwan Landreth-Smith, born and raised in Trinidad. I was actually en route a career in natural gas in the oil and gas industry. I started playing guitar when I was 16 or 17. Which is late, and I was kind of the worst guitarist out of my whole crew that started, so I was just trying to play catch up all the time.
Was it a get the girls thing?
Nah, you know what, it wasn't about that at all, actually. It was about release. I used to listen to a lot of gangster rap and dub and dancehall growing up, and then I discovered Nirvana, and that had a kind of sweet aggression to it. A kind of utopic thing about it. It was it was this huge expression of rage that I fell in love with, and it made sense to me, so I wanted to become part of that. So what I did was I picked up the guitar. And I started feeling that energy. And yeah, so by the time I was 24, I was managing an onshore natural gas processing facility for British Gas. And then I went offshore and I worked with BP at on a platform called Mahogany B. And then I just quit. And I've been doing music full time since then, because I just had songs going through my head all the time, you know? But parallel to music, so I know James through surfing, then through video, and lastly through music, which is actually where we connected the most. Yeah. You know, so we met at a musical junction, and it was really fun. This project, Comma Echo.
You want to kind of throw it back to James now? We can sort of talk about the genesis.
The thing with the ocean, and it's interesting talking about being out on a platform, because this is the reality of where I've been. You spend a lot of time by yourself, and you spend a lot of time, you know, literally just watching the sea sometimes. You might spend a lot of time on the way to a shoot that's remote, there's no road to it or whatever, and you're going up the coast on a little pirogue, which is a little wooden boat, and there's like a 25 horsepower Yamaha outboard engine. It's going, and you get the rhythm of the hull of the boat, you know, hitting wave after wave. It's always brought a hook to my head, and I've always, paid attention to that, as opposed to just saying, whatever, man, I'm busy.
You're in Trinidad, you're writing songs in your head and filming, and you've got that film career. And so what is the step to do anything with that? Why decide to make the project and then talk about roping in, you know, these guys?
That's a really interesting question. Why not just hum it in your head and just leave it right there, right? Working in film for a long time, 15 years, I have had the responsibility of taking, most of the time it's been my client's work and finishing it. Yeah, so it's been very much the case of, you got to go out, you got to do an interview, you got to get some sound, you got to tell a story, you need to get some supporting visuals, you need to build this thing up for a reason. And so my training and just my whole energy has always been towards finish it the best that you possibly can. And I must confess that at some point, very early on, I thought, I'll do this mostly by myself and maybe Lewis will help me. But I just have always had the pleasure, as I said in film, of working with different people to do all of those disciplines that I was telling you about. So I would have something in my head what I kind of knew would be the finished product, but it's got these other six or seven disciplines and you need these best people. It's one of the best things in the world to work with like the best drone operator or the best Steadicam operator, you know, or, you know, a guy who specializes in underwater film and photography, which would be my, you know, that's what I bring to a project, for example. So, and then when you put all those things together, you have like something that competes with primetime, something that if it comes on my TV at, you know, when I should be watching something else, I'm not turning it off because it sounds great and it looks great and people put a lot of work into it.
But all right, so you were in touch with Lewis over all this time? In between, you guys talked music, you guys...
This whole project wouldn't have happened if James hadn't been texting me hundreds of messages over 15 years. And you know, and I would ignore them because I was just this IT job that I took is basically just insanely just too much work, and I've got family, you've got kids, so it's just, you know, life is really hectic. I love music, but I just had no time for it. You know, and then you know, he was my friend who'd gone back to Trinidad, and he was just saying, hey, let's just do this song, let's just do that song. So, okay, and I'd try and stay up till 2 in the morning and do a little bit. Three of the tracks, I think, were ready in 2006 when you were going to go and do it by yourself, I think. Exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah.
The process of the album itself, it wasn't something that you guys decided recently. You know, we need to really do this. This is actually something you guys have been working on over a period of years.
Yeah. So the original some tracks are very old. Some ideas are old. Others sort of evolved throughout some of our collaboration together, and then they sort of organically took form and became better tracks, more interesting tracks. And if it wasn't for James having the relentless energy to keep pushing and putting everything together and packaging and arranging it all, none of this would have happened.
So what would happen to me is I would get up one morning, check my email, and there's a piano track from Lewis. And it would be like Easter and Christmas and, you know, all of these things rolled in together, because it meant that it's like a huge pin that I'd put in something and said, I'm going to hold on to that. I'm going to work on something else, because this track here, all I need is the piano track from Lewis now. And he would just deliver one day and I'd be like, it's done, you know, and then 3 years later, it'd be more done. But that's how it went.
Sort of a cumulative effect between the messages and the work itself. Would you guys rope in afterwards? Who was the first of the other three?
Oh, Kiwan, for sure.
Yeah, so I got the demo and I was really pleasantly surprised about the quality of the songs and how I felt about them. So like I connected to the content of the songs. You know, my first impression was like, all right, cool. I'm thinking of James more, like I know he's a video guy, I know he's a surfer. And he didn't sound 100% confident in the work. He was kind of, he had some intrepidation about approaching.
I've never heard James with trepidation. What does that sound like?
It sounds like him pitching the project to me, right? I listened to it and it was like, all right. And he actually used some chords that are not like run-of-the-mill simple chords. It's whatever James was feeling at the time. And so it was a challenge to, it was a challenge to deconstruct it and to find the harmonic content for me as a like how I would guide myself to create. But it was fun. I know the original and the finished project, and it's like two renditions of the same songs, and I like both of them equally, actually.
So how did you back and forth that? Because you didn't really sit in a studio together and perform it, did you? Or did you do that?
I don't think I ever sat down and played guitar while James was there. Like, James and I, we would probably listen to a couple of things and we'd talk more, but the actual, you know, my performances that I recorded, those were done in solitude. So I would sit down and I would really get into the track, and yeah, so that's pretty much the workflow.
The sitar has always been, for me, associated with stories. It just adds that texture. It was super important. So when we talked about the lead guitar, like why we talked so much was because we were trying to like how do we do this so that we are having a conversation between the lyrics, the lead guitar, and what the sitar is, you know, doing in between there as well. We didn't want to just all play over each other. We wanted to really allow each other the different room to express what it was we were doing.
Yeah, because I had played music with Sharda before. Naturally, I was like, yeah, well, I know this person, and she plays sitar beautifully, and she had nice compositions. So, and you know, at a certain point in your musicianship, like, your personality comes through on the instrument. So her spirit was one that I thought would fit nicely in the realm of things of this project.
I'm always game for a new project, for an interesting project. Collaborations I particularly like doing. This project was actually the first project I felt where the person doing, you know, it's yours, James, right? And you had a clear idea as to what you wanted. Usually the sitar comes in more like an exotic sound, more than a musical instrument. So I really enjoyed working on this. As K1 was saying, I felt that I connected with the music as well. There definitely was a big role for the sitar, and it was easier to work on this. Even though I spent, I think two of the tracks were a little bit problematic for me in terms of the, you know, what he wanted. But it was easy in that he knew what he wanted. What Indian classical music does is gives you a lot of modes to work with, similar to jazz, but there are all these hundreds of different combinations of things that create modes.
And it's microtonal as well, right? So you can't just directly transpose those scales.
Right, but in my own music, I break the rules and I combine modes and so on. And yeah, I sort of play with it because I like experimenting. So if I were to produce a piece, like Ewan was saying, Jabe came with very strange chord combinations, I'd probably be one of those because I'll be working primarily through mood music.
And Chaz, how do you come into this?
So I'm pretty late to the project. Basically, I got a Facebook message from James asking if I would retrack pretty much all of the acoustic guitars on the album. I managed to fortunately talk him down from doing as many as he thought. Because the longer you spend on a project, the less you want to put it out there. And so to see a project like this that's been going on for years and years actually see the light of day is really interesting.